Thank you, Bob. I would be remiss if I didn't recognize someone. Every great fighter pilot has a good wingman, and Bob has had a wingman for many years, and that's his wife, Colleen. She just went back to the hotel. It's so hot out here. I'm sure you understand that. But I want to recognize Colleen Hoover right now. Bye.
She ought to go to sainthood. She's put up with me for 65 years.
Okay, these people came to hear a war story, and that's what this presentation is about. You're flying the Spitfire, I believe, out of Italy. Is that correct? And tell us what happened.
Well, actually, I had some pretty interesting experiences. I couldn't get into combat because when I got to Africa, I had been in England. We had no American airplanes, and we flew with the British. And I was 20 years of age, in charge of 67 fighter pilots when we went into combat. I can't imagine a 20-year-old being given that much responsibility. But that's the way it was during wartime. And I was only a staff sergeant because I wasn't old enough to be an officer. And they promoted me just before we left England to go to Africa. So I took my 67 pilots down there and dreamed of nothing all the way down except getting into combat and what kind of an airplane would I be flying. And I got the first orders to depart. And I thought, oh boy, I can hardly wait to find out where I'm going. And I got to the headquarters. It was in Oran. That was one of the early places where we landed in North Africa. And the colonel I reported into said, "You're not going to a fighter outfit." And I said, "Well, sir, that's what I've been trained for. I think I'm good at it. And that's all I've ever wanted to do." And he said, "We got a more important job for you." And I couldn't think of anything to be more important than going into combat. And he said, "We're bringing airplanes overseas in crates on ships. And they're going to be assembling them here. And we've already got two shiploads of airplanes that are in the assembly line now." Well, they were being assembled by indigenous labor. And we couldn't speak Arabic, and they couldn't speak English. So you can just imagine the rest. Those airplanes were fraught with disaster. Every time I'd get in one, I never knew what was going to fail. And we had a handful of expert inspectors, enlisted like sergeants, and they were supervising all of this, but two or three supervisors can't handle that kind of a volume. I had belly landings just as routinely as most people have Wagner landings. I was not only flying everything we had, they were bringing every kind of a fighter overseas in crates. And when they'd assemble them, I'd take them up and find out what was wrong with them, get them approved for combat action, and away they would go. But I wanted combat. That wasn't what I wanted to do. It was probably a blessing in disguise because I gained experience unlike anyone could ever have gotten, simply because of all of the many different types of airplanes. And I even flew bombers that had battle damage and were repaired. I had to bail out two crews because I wanted to try and save the airplane, and I wouldn't take the chance on doing that with others on board when the situation looked slim for managing to pull it off. And on one occasion, I had a master sergeant. He was an old man for me. He was about 40 years of age. And I had him in the airplane with me, and a bomber, and I had some real bad emergencies. And I said, "You're going to have to get out." And I said, "You'll be trapped in the nose, because that's the only way you can get in and out of the nose of the bomber." And he said, "I'm not getting out on this particular flight." And we had no radio, and I was communicating by writing on what is called a Form 5 for your flight reports, and passing through a little crack from the cockpit down to the nose compartment. and I told him that I was in no danger, but he would be if he stayed on board. And so he kept passing back, "I'm not leaving you." And all the time I was climbing, thank goodness, and I got to 11,000 feet before I finally convinced him with my written messages that he had to get out. And I told him he was imperiling my life of survival by making me delay any longer. And he got out, and I went into a bank angle. I couldn't see a parachute blossom. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've cost this man his life. And I kept looking, and in a few seconds I looked down and I saw a white blossom, saw the parachute open, and he had counted to 10 from what he had seen in movies, and he was free falling. Thank goodness I'd been climbing and was at 11,000 feet, because he was counting to 10 while he was free falling, and that chute opened and he hit the ground pretty hard, broke both ankles. Well, he showed up again in my life, and it was another bomber type situation. There was a Martin Marauder B-26 that was shot down over the Straits of Messina, and that's off the boot of Italy, and an island there that Sicily is the name of the island, and he ended up belly it in, and there was a depot there that repaired the airplane, took it off of its belly, and put pier steel matting down. There was about 1,100 foot of sand on this beach, and he they had got it ready to fly, and he said, this colonel called me up, and he talked to the colonel I reported to, and said, can I borrow him to do this? He said, I need to get the airplane flown off of that beach, and the bomb, I think it was the 319th bomb wing pilots came and looked at it and said, it's impossible, can't be done. And so he said, you'll get a DFC if you can save that airplane, because we need it, and if we have to part it out in pieces, it'll never be a regular bomber again. And so he said, would you accept the responsibility? And I said, sure. Well, I grabbed this sergeant that I had bailed out of the other bomber several months before that, and I said, get me a crew of 10 men. We went down there in a big old army truck and looked over the airplane, and I told him what I wanted. I want every nut and bolt on this airplane that does not have anything to do with the safety of flying it, but anything that it doesn't contribute to the flight going from here to Palermo, which is about a 60-mile trip, will be taken out. Armor plating, the gun turrets, everything, even the co-pilot seat and the instruments over there. And it was probably the lightest weight Martin Marauder that ever flew. Well, I had pure steel planking laid from where the airplane was resting on planking all the way up for a total of 1,100 feet, and got ready to go, and both props ran away. They were electric propellers, electrically controlled, and when they ran away, I was able to get it stopped, and we replaced the batteries, and I had at it again. And this time I was all set to go, and I had both engines running, and I said to this same sergeant that I'd bailed out months before, I said, Sarge, get out as quickly as you can and get that door closed, because it's not accessible from the cockpit. And I said, I'm using up precious fuel while you're trying to fiddle around. I said, get out and let me go. And he said, sir, I'm not going to get out. I'm going with you. I said, you don't have a seat. You don't have a safety belt. Now, you get out. I said, this is a pretty high-risk flight. And he said, if you're going in, I'm going in with you. And so I was so fraught with eagerness to get going, I said, well, then close the door down there and get in. And he was hanging on for dear life. And I got airborne, and the airplane started to sink. It was an uphill grade, and it was about 11 feet down to the water. and it sunk down, but like so many airplanes, you got into ground effect or water effect in this case, and it started flying. And I didn't want to retract the gear until I had the right speeds, because sometimes that drag that's when the doors are opening up and everything. It's, anyway, that I had a good reason for doing it, and pulled the gear up and was on my way. And I got back to Palermo, that 60 miles, and I looked, and I still had a pretty fair amount of fuel. And the sergeant was still hanging on. And I saw a P-40, and I jumped him as if I were another fighter. And he tangled up with me, and I stayed right on his tail, and he couldn't shake me. And nobody could believe that a bomber could do that. But it was so light, it was just an unbelievable airplane. Oh, and I did get the DFC. I did get the DFC without jumping off of the hangar with my rear end on fire.